We're here for another edition of the Outlook series, and I'm your host, Mike Lippis.
We're talking today to David Friedland, the VP of Business Development at IRI, short for Innovative Routines International. IRI is a data management ISV, founded 40 years ago in 1978, with its headquarters in Melbourne, Florida, and support offices in more than 40 cities worldwide. IRI has been best known for its Cosort big data manipulation software, but more recently has been making its bones in the data protection market with its data masking product, FieldShield, as well as a larger data lifecycle management platform that includes FieldShield called Veracity. For the last 10 years, IRI's ability to find and mask data in a fast, targeted way has earned it mentions or awards from the Privacy and Data Security Law Journal and trade publications like CIO Applications, CIO Review, Computer World, Corporate Vision, and DBTA Magazine, plus Research and Markets, Gartner's, and the Bloor Group. David, welcome to the Outlook series.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here, and we appreciate your interest in this topic.
Our topic, as advertised today, is data masking, which is a form of logical data security that's been important for years in the wake of regulations like HIPAA and the breaches of hundreds of millions of private electronic records. It's come again into sharp focus as the GDPR enforcement deadline approaches this May. I'd like to start our discussion of data masking in a larger technical framework that David's company has recently described as start point security. So, David, what is start point security and how does it differ from endpoint security?
Well, start point security is a term that IRI only recently introduced in our blog and on LinkedIn. Most people know what endpoint security is. That's the protection of different points of vulnerability in their information systems, which include and go beneath their network layer to cover different devices, databases, files, and operating systems. So we coined the term start point security to contrast with that and refer to data-centric protection activities, those things that apply only to the personally identifiable information, or PII. That's usually someone's name or social security number, or a so-called quasi-identifier like gender or zip code. Their PII is created, stored, and used inside the endpoints. So to be more specific, we assume in start point security that the folks that collected the PII in the first place got permission to get it and keep it, but once authorized, they typically enter that information into an operational system or database through a point of sale, CRM, or ERP program, spreadsheet, or some form application. Anyway, PII in the underlying files or databases can be revealed through queries, analytics, and lots of applications. So start point security would be about finding and granularly protecting that data as it's stored and as it's accessed, making sure that it stays useful, usable, but also protected and accounted for. So with this layer of start point security, the PII can still have utility, but also be protected enough, regardless of where it winds up and whether or not other layers of endpoint security exist around it.
Now, when it comes to securing personally identifiable information, you know, the PII, what benefits does start point security deliver?
So in addition to adding that extra level of protection I described, start point security activity should also help companies learn where their existing PII lives in their systems, and so they can protect it in ways that are going to be safer and more efficient than endpoint security. So the benefits, again, safety and efficiency for the most part, as well as accuracy and other things. But I say safer because you can apply different protections, different start point or data masking functions to different data elements. By doing it surgically like that, even if you use, let's say, one encryption algorithm and one encryption key on a column, and that gets compromised, only that column you encrypted is at risk by virtue of that compromise. But all the other columns are still protected by other functions. That's why it's nice to do it at the column level. So contrast that to unlocking an entire endpoint when that one encryption key that was used for it gets misappropriated. So now everything on the network or the drive, the database, whatever, is now at risk. It's exposed by that same single decryption key. So you see the contrast between, you know, a single piece of data versus an entire network by virtue of the same encryption breach. I talk about StarPoint security being more efficient because certainly it takes a lot more computation and time to apply a logical security method like encryption to an entire file or network versus just the columns of data that you're really worried about. And with a tool like IRI Field Shield, you could anonymize selective columns in a multi-million row table in a few seconds and you're done. So it's a lot more efficient than encrypting an entire network or database. Mm-hmm. Another benefit of StarPoint security is in the discovery activity. Through value searches and pattern searches of the data, you can locate and classify data for all kinds of different uses. And masking is certainly a great use of that because the data that you're finding and classifying can also be treated with a single masking function so that the ciphertext is consistent and you're preserving referential integrity. Our Field Shield product matches, in fact, masking rules to those data classes just for that purpose. But data discovery is also valuable in data cleansing and data integration. It's useful for master data management and analytics, too. And data masking could also be part of those jobs as well, like in the case of our Veracity data management platform. But maybe we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm. Now, are StarPoint security and data masking the same thing?
No, but they're related. So according to our definition, StarPoint security includes data masking as one of its activities, but masking itself doesn't happen in a vacuum. So in StarPoint security, we're really talking about at least eight other things. The first being data discovery, like we said before, that ability to find the PII via pattern, fuzzy logic, or other scans. Data classification, which is the grouping of the discovered data into categories, so you can do things like apply a consistent masking rule. Data lineage, which is tracking the changes to the sensitive data values and their locations through time. The data state, which is to say whether that data is at rest or in motion, because that affects the way you're going to mask it. Number five would be metadata lineage, which is the metadata lineage as opposed to data lineage. This is the recording and the analyzing of the changes to the layouts of data and to the job definitions. Another part of StarPoint security ought to be authorization or identity access management, which determines who can mask or unmask which data, where, and when they can do it. Another aspect, risk scoring. Which is the measurement of the likelihood of re-identifiability. This is a HIPAA requirement in the expert determination method. And then finally, number eight would be audit logs, so that you can see who masked what and who saw what, when, and where.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get more into data masking itself. And first, what exactly does it mean?
That's a very good question because there's confusion and ambiguity over terms like masking, anonymization, tokenization, and de-identification, which, you know, means different things to different people. Sometimes they all mean the same thing. But for several people, masking just means string redaction or the replacement of a value with a certain character, masking or covering something over. But to most people in our industry, data masking or masking is a generic term for the obfuscation of column-level data, or PII mostly, that uses any function that will hide or de-identify the original value. And there are many ways to mask data.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are those masking functions, and which ones does IRI support?
In the case of IRI Field Shield, at least, we're talking about a dozen or so different categories of functions. There's a lot, and we think we've got the most on the market. The first category I would list is encryption, where we supply both DEES and AES encryption algorithms. We also have optional interfaces to GPG and OpenSSL libraries for those encryption algorithms and the key management functions that they provide. And Field Shield encryptions can also be format preserving. So an encrypted phone number, for example, will still look like a phone number with the parentheses, spaces, and dashes in the right places. So So encryption is just one of those masking functions that we provide. Then there's pseudonymization, which is, you know, as the name suggests, making a fake name in place of the real one, and that's great for de-identifying names and nouns most of the time, which can be reversible or not. And the pseudonyms can be a scrambled lookup of the original names or maybe a random pull from another list. Other functions that we support are redaction, you know, that string masking, hashing, randomization, encoding, bit bashing. There's a few more on the list, and you can also write your own function. And to all those, we're now adding a couple more, like masking numbers anywhere they exist, and also ranging, which generalizes data.
So for these field shielding or data masking techniques, how do you know which one to use?
That's an important question, because what you get back from the masking function really matters. The right answer, of course, is situational, so it's important to pick the best mask for each item. And they're probably going to be different. I mean, you could start by asking whether the mask data needs to be recoverable. That'll cut your choice of functions roughly in half. Then you should ask what the data needs to look like after masking it. Does it need to be realistic or not? You know, how does it look? So that you can make use of it. And also, should the ciphertext or the masked values be unique? Should they be consistent? Now, there's also questions about speed and security of the masking functions. Encryption may be a stronger choice, but it could run slower over a billion rows of data. We have got a blog article that I wrote in the IRI blog site called "Which Data Masking Function Should I Use?" And there, I explained these decision criteria, and I followed them up with a matrix of functions that we support and their attributes to help you kind of think about, you know, which function to use. But we're also putting recommendations into the software to make choosing from those many functions an easier matter.
Hmm. Okay, now let's talk about broader business aspects, starting with the compliance landscape behind the need for data masking. How would you describe this landscape?
I would describe the compliance landscape around data privacy laws and their relation to data masking as all over the map, at least this year, in terms of legislation, in terms of enforcement, and exposure, which I'll define in a minute. In terms of legislation, the landscape is, you know, all over the map. Laws around the protection of personal data is becoming, you know, pretty prevalent now, finally, around the world, whereas laws like HIPAA and standards like PCI have been around in this country for years. Europe caught up first, regionally speaking, with country-specific laws and now community-wide laws like the GDPR. More countries like South Africa with POPI and Argentina, as well as India and Indonesia, have been or are now passing similar laws and sanctions. Enforcement is another matter, however. Certainly our government's been fining big corporations for violating data privacy laws, like HIPAA, as well as for violating principles like choice and consent, collection and notice, use and retention, as well as accuracy, security, and disclosure violations. And Europe will be cracking down this summer, and we'll see what the other countries do. By exposure, I meant that some people will comply and others won't with the law and the way they're exposed to that law. If there's a breach and it's reported, some folks may get away with just a slap on the wrist. Others are going to get fined, suffer lasting reputational damage, or have big legal bills to pay. In essence, the more the private data that's being collected, the more profit that's being made off of the breaches of it due to noncompliance and sloppy security. The more our data is exposed, too.
Is risk management an obligation?
Yes, generally risk management is, and specifically with respect to data privacy and breach risk, that risk management is both a legal and moral obligation, to my mind. It's also a very real regulatory and job responsibility for everyone in data-driven industries. Today, pretty much everybody, from the consumer to the data collector, from the data processor to the regulator. They're obliged to manage the inherent risks of data in those roles that they're in. Consumers, for example, they have to protect their own identifying data. The entities who collect it in order to serve people, they have to safeguard it. Auditors and regulators have to enforce the safeguards. So that's the obligation of those folks. I guess the rest of the world is playing cat and mouse, getting at the confidential data or trying to stop it. They're not obligated to do much except a better job of it. Either that or they're just off the grid and it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the role of formal controls in risk management?
Corporations put formal controls in place to manage business threats, typically, and those are thought to be in relation to strategy, operations, financial reporting, and regulatory compliance. So when people talk about controls, it's usually in those contexts. But because personally identifiable information is a risk that's common in all of those contexts, formal controls also exist to recognize and mitigate just that risk of data, too. In fact, there are all kinds of policies and procedural rules or controls that IT departments, industry consortiums, and governing bodies apply to PII data collection, storage, and use. Those controls might be physical, like, you know, locking the door, personal, like rules you follow about collecting and divulging information, or of course, you know, technical controls like the IRI's programs that detect and correct problems that would expose someone's identity. Many of the formal controls in use today are from documented frameworks like COBIT and COSO, which get developed, published, and updated by organizations like ANSI, ISO, NIST, ISACA, ITIL, and SANS. The last two, ITIL, the Information Technology Infrastructure Library in Great Britain, or SANS, which is the U.S.-based SysAdmin Audit Network and Security Institute, they do research, training, certification, and they hold conferences around these controls. We listed and linked to some of these frameworks in our data masking white paper so that people can evaluate different sets of controls and finding the ones that best suits them. I at least recommend learning about them, if not actually implementing one of these controls.
Mm-hmm. Who is responsible for the controls?
Most IT managers, CISOs, your chief information security officers, chief data officers, and other stewards of data, if not actually responsible for the controls, certainly know the language of them, because there's some responsibility either direct or indirect that they'll have. In GDPR parlance, by the way, those guys are called the data controllers, those men and women who have that control responsibility. Even though they might assign the implementation of those controls and have that work performed by DBAs, data warehouse architects, or developers, who are the so-called data processors. But it's those controllers who will be reporting up the chain, and their jobs are probably going to be the ones on the line if there's a big, you know, a material breach, if you'll pardon the pun. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the corporate officers who are going to face the real legal liability, though, or at least they'll have the accountability to their board or their shareholder committees.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, it'll help if someone is responsible for the controls so that they can, you know, defend the company after a breach when the auditors, the lawyers, or the government regulators come knocking and asking, you know, what kinds of controls were in place.
Mm-hmm. Now, can data accountabilities be mapped to specific job functions or departments?
Sure, and it's necessary when you have the multiple data and application silos of a large enterprise. But for those whose job it is to be accountable for data across departments, again, those higher-ups we talked about, the data collectors, I think too much down-mapping of the accountability is going to make their cross-departmental management job untenable. So I think a CISO is going to want a standard set of controls that everyone in the enterprise will follow, so that these cross-departmental data governance teams can oversee security in a more coherent and cohesive way. By way of example, about what I'm talking about in data masking, if you use a standard tool and you apply the same protection functions to a global data class, you'll be able to query a common audit trail and preserve the referential integrity of that data within or across databases. So in other words, standards and technology can also help preserve a standard and accountability too.
Mm-hmm. Now back to the technology. Why is locating data at risk a challenge, and how does IRI address it?
Locating data at risk is a challenge for lots of different reasons. For one thing, consider that the data that you're trying to protect often lives in different places or silos, as well as in different formats. So just to be able to sift through and scan those files or tables or spreadsheets manually or automatically, you first have to know what systems to search for and then how to get access to them. And ironically, the same endpoint security in place to protect that data may have to temporarily be disabled just so that you can search for it and get access to it for those search purposes. Then, if you can get access to it, you have the issue of the search technology itself, which can vary depending on the data format. The ways that you parse out PII in a text file, for example, or a database, or in an email repository, a PDF document, or in an image file, they're all going to be different. For data in structured formats, though, like flat files, spreadsheets, and databases, IRI software will do pattern lookups and fuzzy match searches. They're all three different kinds of searches for PII, and we do that in data profiling or data search wizards in our graphical IDE. In our data classification wizard, we can also do the searches and at the same time define different classes of data or data classes or class groups, which can then be used to assign a consistent masking rule. So you can you have a class group and then you have a masking rule. You assign the rule to the group so you are consistently masking it. For semi-structured data, though, and unstructured data, specifically in text files, like JSON or PDF and documents like Excel and Word, we have a dark data, so-called dark data discovery wizard, which searches the whole network at once and reports the exact locations of the PII and those kinds of file formats. So it's a really nice discovery technology that, you know, had to overcome a lot of technical challenges to develop. We're also starting to address the parsing and masking of data that's coming in unpredictable intervals. So not just static files, but also things like IoT feeds, right? Mm-hmm. And database updates, which might be incremental and based on a trigger, an event. We haven't yet provided location or masking support for PII in binary sources like X-ray images, but that is on our plate.
Mm-hmm. Does IRI support compliance verification?
Yes, we do that in several ways. In the case of static data masking in the IRI Field Shield product or in the Veracity platform, the underlying job scripts, statistical reports about what they did, and audit logs of what happened, they can all be used for the purpose of verifying compliance with data privacy rules or laws. Those audit logs contain the specifications of your source and target data layouts. Sometimes in the case of our database firewall product, it'll contain, you know, query syntax and even results of what somebody saw. In the case of Field Shield jobs, you'll get all the details about the masking or manipulations done on that data, plus all the attendant runtime information so you know not only what masking was done on what data source, but who did it, where they did it from, and when. Again, in the case of the IRI database firewall product I mentioned, which is called Chakra Max, there's a complete audit trail and lots of report formats so that you can query into that audit log and tell who accessed the database, when they accessed it, and from, you know, what IP address and exactly what did they see and do with that access. So, you know, whichever tool you're using, either our static data masking Field Shield or Veracity platform, or our Chakra Max dynamic data masking database firewall, you're going to get a lot of granular insight into what happened around that data-centric access and protection related or unprotected activity, as the case may be. There's also the matter of verifying compliance. compliance with HIPAA's expert determination method rule. So for people familiar with the HIPAA world, this is where you have to score the statistical likelihood or risk that a mass data set can still be used for re-identifying somebody, okay? Not only from, you know, maybe key identifiers you didn't properly secure, but also from the quasi-identifiers like gender and zip code that are left in the record. So part of verifying that you've complied is to prove that you have masked the data in a way that renders it having a very statistically low likelihood of re-identification. And we're currently integrating technology that's specifically designed to measure that risk or that probability from the perspective of different attack models.
Hmm. Can you share a use case with us?
There are lots of different use cases around data masking generally. You know, they may or may not be HIPAA specific, you know, from credit card masking in banks to personal identifiable information in HR applications. And again, especially in healthcare, where the protected health information has to be de-identified in clinical and research settings, marketing and insurance databases, and in every imaginable electronic form. There's so many to share. I guess it's best to share the typical one where our customer is a HIPAA-covered business associate as opposed to a covered entity, but a business associate that needs to use that sensitive data for their own marketing purposes, let's say, or research purposes, and they need to find the PHI, the protected health information, classify, de-identify it, and score that risk to comply with the expert determination method. So that's a pretty common use case for our IRI Field Shield data masking technology and risk assessment. They also need to provide an audit trail for the masking, like we discussed, for verifying compliance with the privacy rules. Some of our use cases also want us to further manipulate the data that's being masked, because we're doing more things at once, particularly in our Veracity platform, which again has Field Shield masking in it, but also all this other data manipulation capability. And their data can be in relational databases, and some of it have their data in big plain old CSV files, too.
Now, should data transformation and protection be combined?
Sometimes, sure. If you need to do both, why not? Why not combine them to save the time and the I.O. of multiple passes through the data? Again, in the Veracity platform, which includes Field Shield, you can combine data searching, classification, masking, and testing with lots of different jobs, including multi-threaded data transformations. In fact, beyond transformation and masking, you can also add data cleansing, reformatting, segmentation, even reporting, because those are all built-in functions. I think that more and more data warehouse and BI architects are thinking about these combinations as a way to save their time and also as a way to add security to ETL operations, right, and to analytics and you know, the visualization thereof. Masking can be built into that. It can also play a role in data quality and master data initiatives, not to mention the role of data masking in migrations, replication, and of course, test data generation. So it's really these kinds of combinations, you know, masking while transforming, while reporting, that we had in mind when we created Veracity as a platform product. By offering all this multi-tool functionality in the same pane of glass, which, by the way, is built on Eclipse, and in the same I.O. path to save you all that time and storage and processing overhead, you're getting a one-stop shop, which CIOs tend to want so that they can, you know, not only get more bang for the buck product-wise, but they can use to get all the value they want out of their data, but remain compliant at the same time and have that whole data landscape, you know, throughout its life cycle be well governed.
What are some of the other things related to data masking worth considering?
Well, a very common reason for masking data at rest is for using it in application testing, that is, for making test data. Test data management is a whole other discipline in data management and data masking, because very often they're related, even though that, even though masking, I would say, is not necessarily the best approach to test data generation. Another thing related to data masking that's worth considering but we haven't really talked about is dynamic data masking. I mentioned it briefly before, but it's a big discipline as well. It's the protection of data in motion, usually between a database and an application that queries the data in that database. IRI supports this intercept or this dynamic data masking through different connection paradigms in our database firewall product, Chakra Max. Chakra Max will also monitor, alert, block, and audit, you know, all the user access and SQL activity. But the its ability to do policy-based dynamic data masking is a common need. And it's important to set that up correctly, particularly in very high traffic, high transaction environments.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can safe test data be created?
So today, most people who need test data, they're either going to generate random values, you know, with their own tools or something that they, some open source library maybe. Those values may not be realistic enough, so what they'll do is mask data in production. That's why I mentioned just earlier that data masking and test data generally get wrapped up into the same thought process. Problem, though, is that mask data in production might represent reality, but it might not. But either way, whether they're generating the random values or they're masking production data, they're addressing the safe test data creation issue most of the time, right? But again, not necessarily the smart test data issue, which is something worth talking about. And that's because, you know, randomly generated or even mass production data may not be that useful when it comes to stress testing a future system, right? Because the production data that you're about to mask may not have enough representative data in it to reflect the reality of tomorrow. Heck, it might not even exist yet, or if it does, you can't get at it because it's restricted. So there are other ways to create what I call safe and smart test data. IRI has four of them, by the way, and just quickly I'll list them. The first way is to do the data masking, like we talked about. For test data purposes, that means applying a strong enough masking function to both key and quasi-identifying values that they are rendered safe but still realistic. In that case, a pseudonymization function would work best for names and nouns. And format-preserving encryption would be good for Social Security and credit card numbers because they'll be safe, but they'll be perfect for testing because they look just like the real thing. Our second test data creation method would be database subsetting, where we've got this wizard in Veracity that has you define the tables and the row counts that you want to use for testing. And it'll also have some options for masking those columns from the subsets. The third way is by generating the test data from scratch in an intelligent way, which means using production metadata, not production data. And if you do that with our technology we call IRI Rogen, which is also part of Veracity, you'll wind up with structurally and referentially correct test data. So what this technology does is parse the DDL information from the database connection that we've got. It'll then create the test data with either randomly generated values that are in the correct data type and value range, or it'll randomly select data from real sets. And it'll do either on a column-by-column basis according to the rules that you define. So the end result is you're loaded up with fresh and smart test data with the right ranges of values and the right relationships between those tables. The fourth and final way that you can create safe and smart test data is by combining all the methods I talked about. In Veracity, again, our platform that has lots of different things inside of it, you can do just that. You can mask some columns, you can generate others from scratch, or you can do things like, you know, lookups on real data values or modify the real data values. Whatever combination of things that you need to do to generate a smart test set is going to be enabled in that fourth scenario.
Mm-hmm. Now, what software products constitute the IRI Data Protector Suite?
The products in the suite, half of which, or actually most of which, do data masking, of course, are currently IRI Field Shield. That's the first one and the most commonly asked about. Field Shield is there for data discovery and static data masking, typically for structured files, tables, or feeds, which usually means relational databases, right, structured data. But sometimes it also means hierarchical mainframe files, even NoSQL databases and cloud apps, which you might not think of as structured, but actually can be structured by virtue of the imposition of an ODBC and JDBC layer that we'll work with as long as you have those drivers. The second product in the IRI Data Protector Suite is called Cell Shield, which, like Field Shield, does data discovery and data masking, except it does it specifically for Microsoft Excel, for spreadsheets. We've got both an inexpensive add-in version as well as an enterprise edition for scanning, and in that case, masking hundreds or thousands of sheets at once across an entire network. The third product in the Protector Suite is RoGen, which I mentioned before, is there to generate structurally and referentially correct test data from scratch. And the fourth is Chakra Max, which is IRI's high-traffic database firewall for very high-volume SQL activity monitoring, protection, auditing, and dynamic data masking.
All right. And so, you know, finally, where can our audience get more information on IRI and all of its solutions for masking and otherwise managing data at risk?
If you remember just IRI.com, that's where you'll find all that stuff. But once you're in there, I would check out the solutions section, IRI.com/solutions. And then I'd go, if you're technically minded, into the IRI.com/blog or blog.IRI.com site and see some of the how-to articles on masking data in the data protection category, for example.
All right, David, well, I certainly appreciate you joining us here today, and I wish you the best of luck over there at IRI and your data masking initiatives.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's truly a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to log on to the Outlook Series site for your business and technology news. We'll be right back.